Okay, we'll make a start. Good evening, my name is Claire Gladewright, Deputy Mayor of Kingborough. It is my pleasure to welcome you all to tonight's council meeting on Monday the 16th of October 2023. Welcome to those in the public gallery and watching the live stream at home via YouTube. It's 5:30pm and I now officially declare this meeting open. I wish to advise that council meetings are recorded and made publicly available on our website. In accordance with council's policy, I will ask the general manager to confirm that the audio recording has commenced.
Confirmed, Acting Mayor.
I wish to acknowledge the traditional custodians of this land, pay respects to elders past and present, and acknowledge today's Tasmanian Aboriginal community. Attendees this evening, we have myself, Deputy Mayor, Councillor Gladewright, Councillor Antoli, Councillor Bain, Councillor Cordova, Councillor Dean, Councillor Fox, Councillor Midgley, Councillor Richardson and Councillor Street. From our staff this evening, we have the General Manager, Mr Gary Arnold, Chief Financial Officer, Mr David Spinks, Director of Engineering Services, Mr David Reeve, Director of Governance, Recreation and Property Services, Mr Daniel Smee, Director of the Environment, Development and Community Services, Ms Heather Salisbury, Coordinator of Building and Plumbing, Mr Andy DeCruz, Team Leader, Statutory Planner, Mr Timothy Donovan, Media and Communications Advisor, Ms Sam Adams, and Program Manager, Transform Kingston, Mr Daniel Kymet-Soglu. Apologies this evening from our Mayor, Councillor Reet. Page 1, confirmation of minutes. That the minutes of the open session of Council Meeting number 19, held on the 2nd of October 2023, be confirmed as a true record. I'm looking for a mover and a seconder, please. Move, Councillor Fox. Seconded, Councillor Midgley. All those in favour, please say aye.
Aye.
Motion is carried. Workshops held since the last council meeting. On the 2nd of October, we had a workshop on the AFL High Performance Centre, and on the 9th of October, we had a workshop on the Derwent Estuary Program. Declarations of interest. Does any councillor have an interest they would like to declare? Councillor Fox?
Yes. DA 2023-276 at 26 Groningen Road. I'd like to declare that my brother lives on the opposite side of the road, but as he did not put in a representation, I will not be leaving the room. Thank you.
Thank you. Anybody else? Transfer of agenda items. Is there any item on the agenda that a councillor would like to transfer from open into closed session or closed into open session? No. Questions without notice from the public. Does any member of the public wish to ask a question without notice? If you'd like to just state your name and your suburb.
Thanks, Deputy Mayor. My name is Vishnu Paralad. I'm a resident of Kingborough. I'm at 33 Groningen Road. My question relates to the DA.
Sorry, before you go on, I just need to check. We can't take questions regarding anything that's on the agenda. So you can send an email to casey@kingborough.tas.gov.au,
okay.
Or you could send an email to the General Manager, but this evening we can't take any questions regarding anything that's on the agenda.
Yeah, thank you.
Okay. Any other questions? No. Questions on notice from the public. If you wish to submit a question on notice, you can do so by completing the relevant form on Council's website or by emailing casey@kingborough.tas.gov.au. At the time the agenda was compiled, there were no questions on notice from the public. Questions without notice from councillors. Does any councillor wish to ask a question without notice? Councillor Antoli.
Thank you, Acting Mayor. I have a question for Council. The first is two-part. It's regarding line markings. If Council could, or Council Officer could provide an update on discussions we've had over the past several meetings regarding line marking improvements for Redwood Road and Maranoa Road. And I'll give part B now or after the first one's answered. What's your preference, Acting Mayor?
We'll leave that up to David Reeve.
Through you, Acting Mayor, maybe we'll do the Part B afterwards, just so I can keep it clear. So in answer to your first question, as I've sort of mentioned in a previous meeting, the Marinara Road line marking will be done as part of a road safety project, which is currently under design and is due to be starting work sometime in the next calendar year. For the Redwood Road, we currently have put a submission into Department of State Growth, which is sitting with them. So we expect to hear back from them very shortly as to whether they will fund that. If they don't fund that, then we do have some funds within our road safety program to actually undertake those works. So we would imagine we will get an answer on that one sometime in the next 2 to 3 weeks.
Councillor Antoli.
Thank you for the answer. And the follow-up question is that locals have approached me wanting to do basically a working bee and line mark the roads themselves to assist council to get it done. What would council's response be to those Good Samaritans out there wanting to contribute?
Mr. Reeve.
Through you, Acting Mayor, I would strongly counsel them not to actually go down that track for many different reasons, primarily to do with the risk that they will actually take on board by actually effectively graffitiing the roads, because road line marking has its own particular standard that it actually needs to be constructed to, and occasionally we will find that people may wish to actually try and, if you like, decide to put their own line marking, mainly on curbs, where they'd like to actually put the yellow line marking on curbs themselves, and we then require them to remove that. So it ends up becoming an expense for whoever might happen to do that. Having said that, if there's concerns, individual concerns from ratepayers out there as to particular instances of line marking or lack of line marking, we're always available to have that discussion with them.
Councillor Antoli.
Thank you. And maybe just a follow-up to that, would there be any sort of feedback on personal and public safety about gangs of ratepayers being on the road, taking charge of the road while doing line markings? Does council have an opinion on that?
Mr. Reeve.
Through your Acting Mayor, yes, we do have an opinion on that, and we suggest that they don't do that.
Councillor Antoli.
Thank you. That reflects my commentary to them as well, but it's good to have it on the record. My second question is about some maintenance work that was recently done on the Alona Hall roof. Locals have asked me to find out what has happened with the completion of that work. They claim that part of the roof is still covered in moss, and they are concerned that that part of the roof which feeds water to the school could be contaminated.
Mr. Reeve.
Through your Acting Mayor, I can say it's not contaminated. It's pretty common for roofs to actually have lichen growing on them. We do have a program to actually remove lichen from roofs, but it's a fairly expensive process so it's based on a 5-year schedule. For this particular one, it was assessed going back a few months ago, and some work was done on cleaning the guttering, but the lichen actually on the roof there was probably less than what we'd have on our other halls around the place, but we are happy to go down there and clean off a couple of the patches. There might be larger patches there just to deal with the immediate issue that's been raised.
Councillor Antoli.
Thank you. That's all from me.
Okay, I have 3 questions. I saw a post recently on our socials saying that if you're installing solar panels, you may require a development application, and I was just wondering if someone could explain, please, when a development application is required and when it is not. Mr. De Cruz. If you could just pop your mic on, thank
you. Through you, Mayor. It depends on the relevant zone for the property. We kept it fairly broad in the advice from the perspective of the building side of things is very, very clear, but the planning side of things can differ between properties. So we kept the advice in that to recommended customers to for the community to contact the planning department regarding their specific property.
So it comes down to size of the property?
Yeah, it can come down to the zone and the tilt, the aspect, a whole range of different things. So it's really specific to the installation and the site.
Okay, but there are some situations where a development application isn't required for solar panels?
Potentially, yep. Yep, some are exempt, some proposals will be exempt, but it's fairly complicated, probably too much. The intent was that of that community release was just to say that in some circumstances a planning permit might be required for solar, and that if they wanted further information about the building requirements, that they could go to that link and find out the specific building requirements.
Okay, thank you. I have a second question. With another serious accident on Algona Road recently, do the staff feel there is any merit in applying for a speed limit reduction? Mr. Reeve.
Through you, Acting Mayor. I guess from our perspective, it would just be advocating with Department of State Growth, bearing in mind it's not a council road, but it's certainly something that we could liaise with State Growth to see what their viewpoints actually are on it. I guess with any speed reduction, they look at a number of different factors, whether it's on council roads or on their own roads. Accident history is just one of them. So it may be that their accident history, albeit, you know, that was an appalling accident, may not actually support that, but happy to do it at an officer level and contact State Growth and see what their viewpoints are on it.
Thank you. And a third question from me regarding the ducks along the Huon Highway. So adjacent to the wetlands, there is a large community of ducks, and at the moment they've got their little ducklings, and I don't know if other councillors have been tagged in various posts and received lots of emails, but I certainly have, and there seems a lot of community members are after maybe some warning signs, because the ducks are creating a bit of a hazard there where people are having to brake sharply. And indeed, just yesterday I came around one of those roundabouts and there was mother duck with 12 little ducklings, and my 8-year-old daughter said, "Mummy, don't you know the mayor?" And I said, "Well, I know Mr. Reeve, so I'm sure he could do something about it for us." Mr. Reeve.
Reacting me, I'll try not to duck out of this question. So yes, happy to take that on board there and have a look at that particular area there and see if anything's warranted in that area.
And just on that, in terms of the population of ducks down there, what sort of plans are there for managing that population, or if there is any, Mr. Reeve?
Yeah, I doubt if there's any concrete plans to actually manage it. I mean, the only reason you would actually try and deal with a situation like that is if it was becoming a major issue in terms of interacting with vehicles and bits and pieces like that. But otherwise, and you'd be talking about things like relocation and measures like that. But I don't think there's any particular plans for that area to actually do anything. But we'll have a look at it in terms of what the magnitude of the issue is and look at what the response is, whether that's just signage or whether it's some other measures as well.
Okay, thank you very much. Are there any other questions? Yeah, Councillor Cordova and then Councillor Dean.
Thank you, Acting Mayor. My question relates to the swimming pool feasibility study from February 2021, publicised by the Mayor in August of 2021. When will there be, or are there any, plans to update or review the swimming pool feasibility study for Kingborough?
Mr. Smee.
Through you, Acting Mayor, councillors would be aware that we are in the process of preparing a sport and recreation strategy, an update to the 2013 document, and on the agenda papers for tonight there is a community engagement report associated with that process, and certainly one of the key themes coming out of that engagement is that the community still very much want an aquatic facility of some sort. So I suspect that will be addressed as part of the formation of the strategy, and an appropriate recommendation will come forward from that.
Councillor Cordova.
So a follow-up to that is just that if it turns out that cost was the issue in delaying council from acting earlier on what was a well-known issue about how popular an aquatic facility would be for the municipality, are we going to consider different models or different versions or kind of pared back versions? Because my recollection is that the feasibility study contained a kind of all bells and whistles option that was about maybe $40 million. What's council going to do about trying a lot of different options, including some that might be more economically available to us?
Mr. Smee.
Through you, Acting Mayor, what was recommended in the feasibility study was the optimum model for a population the size of Kingborough. So it wasn't necessarily all the bells and whistles. It was the best model in terms of being the most economically viable. And the advice from the consultant very strongly was, if you pare back what's offered, it will increase the operating costs. So yes, it's an option to go for a lesser size or scope of facility, but it will increase the annual operating cost for it. So all of those issues need to be revisited, as I said, as part of the recommendations coming out of the strategy. The feasibility study did provide some comments in relation to if council wanted to take this forward. There was an action plan to do that, but ultimately it will require a significant capital investment, and it will require council to be prepared to subsidise the operations of that facility, which obviously will mean have an impact on our rates.
Councillor Cordova.
Thank you, that's all.
Councillor Dean.
Yeah, thanks, Acting Mayor. My question is just regarding to the bottom about the area at the bottom of New Burnie Crescent in Taroona, which is a known landslip area. Council has a bit of a walking path along there and has previously set up some temporary fencing there, and recently that fencing has is a bit prone to falling down time and again, so I'm just wondering if staff could respond to potentially putting it back up and whether maybe a more permanent fencing solution may be provided.
Mr. Reeve.
Through you, Acting Mayor, yes, happy to have a look at that one there and see whether there's a more permanent solution that could be put in place.
Are there any other questions without notice from councillors? No. Page 2, questions on notice from councillors. At the time the agenda was compiled, there were no questions on notice from councillors. The open session adjourns and the Planning Authority commences at 5:50 p.m. Page 3, officers' reports to the Planning Authority. We have before us DA 2023-276, development application for 4 multiple dwellings, 1 existing and associated works at 26 Groningen Road, Kingston. I'm looking for a mover and a seconder, please. Looking for a mover, please. Come on.
So moved.
Councillor Street, so moved. I'm looking for a seconder as well, please. Seconded Councillor Antoli. Councillor Street.
Thank you, Acting Mayor. We have before us a development application for a site at 26 Groningen Road, Kingston, for 4 multiple dwellings with 1 existing and associated works. Staff have put together a comprehensive report that recommends approval with conditions, and as always I thank them for the extensive work that they have put into the report. By way of background, councillors have been made aware that there is a development application for 4 units in place as a result of an application dating back to December 2018. And council issued a planning permit on the 11th of May 2020. Subject to appeal, there were amendments to several conditions on that permit, but relevantly, a permit does or did exist.
That permit having lapsed, the applicant has relodged a further permit, which we're advised by staff comply with the, or does comply, does match the terms of the amended planning permit that arose out of the mediated outcome from the 2020 appeal. Council staff have gone through that planning permit again, notwithstanding that it's in much the same terms as the original permit, and ensured that the application does meet the terms of the planning scheme. I agree with the advice that it very much does fit within the terms of the planning scheme. I note the representations, but also put my view on the record that the responses to those representations from council staff have been satisfactory to me, both in terms of the aspects of the representations with respect to privacy, environmental concerns, and the complaints regarding zone purpose and desired future character statements, amongst others. Again, thanks staff for their work. In light of the history of this matter and the application of the report before me, I will be voting to approve with conditions in accordance with the recommendation, and would encourage my colleagues to do likewise.
Thank you, Councillor Street. For my own contribution, just to repeat what you've said, the history of this proposal is that a DA was lodged in 2018 and a permit granted in 2020, and in that same year an appeal was lodged, mediation was conducted and amended conditions were directed. The permit then lapsed and construction activities were reported in July this year, and now we have the application back before us, including the required reports. Unfortunately, in that time, representors have never had their qualms eased, and my reading of the situation is that the future character that is desired by the neighbours does not match the desired future character statements of the planning scheme. Ultimately, the representors wish for less units, but the report tells us that the proposal complies with the local area objectives and also the desired future character statements, as the proposal is for a residential use within required density. I always struggle with this part of being a councillor, along with the dual role of sitting as the planning authority, because it can feel like there is an inability to actually represent the community. On the other hand, I believe it would be irresponsible for us to not approve this DA, as it clearly complies with the requirements of the scheme. It has already been dealt with in the tribunal, and as such, I will also be supporting the recommendation. Are there any other contributions? Councillor Dean.
A lot of what you've just said there, Acting Mayor, I think probably resonates with, or definitely with me. I won't speak on behalf of others. And reading the correspondence that we've had from representations and reading the report, I agree with what Logie said there. It's a tough one in terms of what I can see, that what we've got is the zoning purpose here is for a general residential zone, but potentially, as you've pointed out, the clash here is that locals there perhaps don't see that's the most appropriate fit. Because when you look through the relevant zone purpose statements, general residential, it's clear that infill developments such as units like this are exactly appropriate. Whether locals feel that it's appropriate on Groningen in that particular part of Firstside is another question. I did think it would be useful for those listening at home, and maybe for us as councillors too, because a lot of us weren't here when the last DA was approved in 2020. And so whether staff could just simply provide a bit of a response. I know they've done a really good job in the detailed report here, but just on two areas. One is just to talk us through what happened in terms of the tribunal process, and the fact that Councillor Street's highlighted that that process took place and there were some amendments to the conditions that are in tonight. So if we could just potentially, in the first question that I have, is just to talk to those, that tribunal process, and what the conditions were, what was changed between now and then.
Mr. Donovan.
Through you, Deputy Mayor, Acting Mayor. I'll do my best. Well, I wasn't here either, so I have read a bit about it. My first comment would be that the final version was similar to Council's decision, but a couple of key changes were in relation to some minor design changes dealing with screening from neighbours, and also in relation to the need to have landscaping, and also the need to do a proper geotech report. So they were the ones that the tribunal emphasised and added to our requirements. Apart from that, there wasn't much difference. But in relation to another key issue, which was the tree, which is an adjacent property, there was a fair bit of discussion on that particular issue as well in terms of impacts on it and how it might be managed. There were some additional conditions around that as well, just to reinforce that it be looked after, and or if there were any damage, how it would be repaired. So that were the main highlights. Thank you.
Councillor Dean.
And just to follow up on that last point that you've made there, Officer, we've established in one of the conditions here that there'll be a bond paid. So could you just maybe talk briefly to how that process works and in what situation, what needs to happen now moving forward for that condition to be met, and otherwise what happens around a bond? Because I believe it's the first type of situation that I've come across as a councillor.
Mr Donovan.
For you, Acting Mayor. There is a condition, as there was last time, imposed for the bond, for the tree and its protection and ongoing management. So a general statement is that we do take bonds for a range of things. Quite commonly, you might be aware that we take them for roads and water and sewage and stormwater, typically engineering works. But we are allowed to take bonds for a range of things. And the tree, likewise, is identified in the scheme in various ways, in terms of it being the works around it. And so there is a nexus between the planning scheme and taking bonds for what's relevant. In this case, it was the tree. We haven't done it a lot, but we have done it on occasions, taking those sorts of bonds. So typically, the bond would be required to be paid before works would commence officially. And then we would, at various times, scrutinise what's going on, and they have a couple of key targets to meet, as you can see through the conditions. So the bond would be kept and not returned until we were satisfied they'd met those conditions, which is how bonds are usually managed. Yeah. So with engineering works, it might be you complete a road and it goes through a maintenance period. In this case, they're required to protect the tree and also, as you can see, at various stages, look after the tree. So the bond would be there to ensure that happens, and or if it is damaged, we've got something to rely on to get it repaired. I would say that the bond was fixed as an amount, looking at what would be needed to be done by various experts, particularly arborists, in looking at the tree and taking any action required.
Councillor Dean.
And just on the issue that you've raised there around the removal of a tree on an adjacent property, could you just explain as to how that kind of fits outside the scope of our decision making as part of this planning authority? Because my understanding is that removal that happened in the period between the original DA lapsing and the new one commencing.
Mr Donovan.
Thank you, Acting Mayor. I'm not sure what the question's about in terms of removal of a tree. We're talking about a tree being protected, so perhaps I missed something here.
Sorry, you mentioned in your response before that in the adjacent property of 30A there was a tree removed, and it's discussed in the report that a tree was removed and adjacent, and the correspondence that councillors have received is that fairly strong allegations that it was linked to the developer themselves. So my question is around why is it that we cannot, as a planning authority, consider that? Is it because that the removal of that tree, we A, can't verify that allegation, but B, was it because it sat outside the time that the DA had lapsed?
Mr Donovan.
Now I remember, so sorry, it took me a while to catch up. Yeah, there is a reference in the report to that other tree that is allegedly removed, or was removed. You're quite right, though. We don't know by who and when, officially, and it wasn't part of this application's work, so this application can't address that. That would be a matter for our compliance team. And in relation to a number of issues that are being raised by neighbours, that our compliance team is looking at those. In relation to this site and the works that were commenced under the premise the person had a valid permit but didn't, then our normal process would be to stop the works, which has happened, and get an approval for them, which has happened, and then look at any action required, including remedial works, and that's what's happening now. So I guess in terms of that aspect and what this actual development's doing, that's what we're, council's doing the right thing. But in relation to that particular tree, yeah, I think the circumstances are we just don't know who and when. Yeah.
Councillor Dean.
Look, I just want to thank you for your comments. I'm sure other councillors will have a few other questions before it comes to a vote. Thank you.
Are there any other contributions or questions, Councillor Antoli?
Thank you, Acting Mayor. My question, sometimes from time to time we see DAs come before us and there are a number of conditions and there's communication between council and the developer and there's sometimes a comment in there that the developer has agreed to the conditions. Has there been any communication in this case with the developer on what we are deciding tonight?
Mr. Donovan.
Thank you, Acting Mayor. To answer the question, simply no. I haven't spoken to the developer since the report's been finished, and he certainly hasn't come back to me and made any comments, no.
Councillor Antoli.
I'm just trying to understand why there is that communication at times and other times not.
Mr. Donovan.
Well, I can't answer the question, I'm sorry. It's not our standard procedure to ask the developer how they feel about our conditions and recommendations before they go up. Where there's a conversation and things are happening, yes, we do talk to them, but I'm sorry, I don't know if I can answer the question any better. We don't have that in our formal process. If it occurs, it occurs as a outcome of a discussion at the time, but normally we wouldn't ask the developer how they feel about conditions going up, no.
Councillor Antoli.
Is there any obligation that we have when we, with a particularly high profile, or let me rephrase that, in a somewhat high profile and controversial development that's gone through some torturous twists and turns, would it not be advisable to see whether or not the developer could even meet the conditions in the current environment, the building environment, rather than delivering them ex cathedra? It's an act, from my point of view as a councillor, it's sort of a customer service issue as well. And are we going to see, based on these conditions, this property undeveloped for a lengthy period of time again or collapse? Because we would like to see proper development done for, you know, the housing needs of the community, but also we would like to make sure we're engaging, not in a difficult manner with our developers in the community. And I'm just trying to understand why we do it for some and not for others.
Mr. Donovan.
Through you, Acting Mayor. Several comments there, but perhaps I'll start this way. Please don't think we don't talk to developers. We certainly do. In this case, we have. And we usually would talk to them also when we receive objections and submissions. We make them fully aware of what's in those. We have a discussion with developers around those. We give them the chance to make any comments and or changes to their designs to respond to concerns from neighbours. That was done in this case. The applicant certainly was aware of what was being raised by neighbours and what the issues were. They're also, I believe, they were aware of what the conditions would likely to be based on the previous approval. So we do talk to developers. You mentioned high profile, but we don't view them that way. Certainly with applications that are complex, we would talk to developers through the whole process as we assess applications and raise issues. So that conversation happens, but you're quite right. There's no requirement in legislation for councils to contact those persons once a recommendation's made and conditions are prepared to see what they think about them or how they might respond. That's not part of the current legislation yet.
Councillor Antoli.
Thank you. Just my contribution. I appreciate those answers, Mr. Donovan. Good on you. Given that there are 21 conditions, I think this... Finally, development's ready to go, and I'll be supporting it, and I appreciate the effort that the team's put into informing us all about the history.
Further questions or contributions? Councillor Cordova.
Thank you, Acting Mayor. Firstly, a couple of questions. In the report, this similar report that came before this council on the 11th of May 2020, there was at the time, and I realise we're looking at a totally different thing now, but there was at the time mention about then 10.4.3A2, which was private open space, and there was also talk about sunlight and overshadowing. Is the reason why those factors of private open space and sunlight and overshadowing appear no longer relevant for consideration in this DA, is that because of the Planning Directive 8, which commenced in February 22, or are there other reasons why this doesn't come into it?
Mr. Donovan.
You're acting there. Yes, you're correct.
Oh, good.
There've been changes to the scheme through a couple of directives over that time, and they've removed those requirements for general residential development and for multiple dwellings to require those matters to be standards of construction. They relate to, you're quite right, to open space, its location, also to issues with privacy and overlooking. They've been removed and no longer required.
Councillor Cordova.
Thank you. Let it be known that I think that that was a bad call, but nevertheless, we persevere. In the submission that included the report by Tree Inclined on page 5, the report said, I recommend that a condition be imposed by Kingborough Council as part of the DA approval process on the developer to, and this is the quote, address any branch or leader dieback or death in the southeastern half of the White Gums canopy within 5 years of the development completion. Please may I have some more explanation about what is meant by addressing branch or leader dieback or death in the southeastern half. Can we just unpack what the conditions were that were recommended?
Mr. Donovan.
I may have to perhaps not answer that question in full. That's probably a qualified question for our arborist and environmental people.
Okay.
I'm sorry, I can't think better than that.
Okay, yeah. Thank you. That's Councillor Cordova.
Thank you, Acting Mayor. So it appeared to me, well, it is the case that in May of 2020, the bond that was set at that time for that tree was $5,000 and now it's dropped to $3,000. And my understanding now is that that was as a result of some of the mediation that took place. But I just make the point that that's one of the rare instances in Tasmania where prices have gone down. But it's a refundable tree bond nevertheless. So if I might just begin my substantive contribution, Acting Mayor. There are compelling reasons in this scenario for why, and some of these have been addressed in what has so far been a surprisingly robust discussion, the need for multi-unit development close to areas of commercial activity in the Kingston CBD. I do agree with that, that there is a need for multi-unit development. The zone purpose statements include 10.1.1.4 to implement the regional settlement strategy and the Greater Hobart Residential Strategy. That wasn't actually part of the consideration back in 2020. But it is now. Zone purpose statements include 10.1.1.1, provide development that accommodates a range of dwelling types, and at 10.1.1.6, encourage urban consolidation and greater housing choice through a range of housing types and residential densities. It's also worth noting that the representations that we received this time, there were three of them. In the previous iteration, there were nine. And mediations have taken place during that appeal, showing compromise. The low landslip risk that's dealt with in the report, the matters raised at E11 Waterway and Coastal Protection Code, Building and Works, with an explanation of why the proposal can be supported against performance criteria P1 of clause E11.7.1, which is on page 13. Then on the other hand, the reasons that I think that this proposal is not up to muster include, on the other side, the zone purpose statement 10.1.1.5, which is, quote, to encourage residential development that respects the neighbourhood character, natural landscape, and provides a high standard of residential amenity. But the most compelling reason why, you know, we're trying to balance these multiple factors against each other and see where our discretion lands, the most compelling reason for me and the reason why I am voting against this is clause 10.4.2A4. It's not complying. The performance criteria 4 under setbacks and building envelope for all dwellings. That's the discretionary area here. Buildings and works are designed and located to avoid, minimise, mitigate and offset impacts on trees of high conservation value. I note the officer's response as to why the proposed variation can be supported, and that's on page 8 and 9 of this report. However, I have arrived at a different conclusion. There are, in my opinion, alternative design options for buildings and works to avoid, minimise and mitigate impacts on the tree of very high conservation value. And it should be noted that the encroachment of units 3 and 4 is considered major under AS 4970/2009. A trimming of this tree is also proposed. Secondly, in terms of compelling reasons why I don't think it's up to muster, are clause E5.6.2A2, road junctions and access, A2 not complying. Units 1, 2 and 3 will share the existing driveway. Unit 4 will have a new separate access. I do note the report says on page 12 that the addition of a second driveway is unlikely to compromise pedestrian or traffic safety, neighbouring amenity or convenience. However, on this point, having visited the site, I drove around that area. My opinion on the matter diverges from that presented in the report. It is an area where there's cars parked, particularly on the southern side of the street. I think it is difficult. If the scale of this development were more proportionate, there are multi-unit developments in that area. If we keep adding more and more cars entering in and out in a way that doesn't comply with the planning scheme, it's going to, over time, cause more problems. And then finally, site distance at accesses, junctions and level crossings. So that's clause E5.6.4A1, not complying. The new access does not comply with the safe intersection site distance shown in table E5.1. So for those reasons, I'll be voting against. Thank you, Acting Mayor.
Thank you. Any other contributions or questions? No. Councillor Street, would you like to sum up? No. I'll put the motion then. The recommendation is printed from page 18. It was moved by Councillor Street, seconded by Councillor Antoli. All those in favour, please say aye. And against? We have a division. All those in favour, please raise your hand. We have Antoli, Dean, Bain, Midgley, Richardson, Street and Gladewright. And against, we have Fox and Cordova. The motion is carried. The Planning Authority now adjourns and the open session recommences at 6:10 p.m. We're on page 53, petitions still being actioned. There are no petitions still being actioned. Petitions received in the last period. At the time the agenda was compiled, no petitions had been received. Officers' reports to Council. We are looking at the appendices. There is a recommendation on page 53, which, if I go to it quickly, says that the appendices attached to the agenda be received and noted.
Can I ask a question, sorry, Acting Mayor, on the appendices?
Yeah, well, we're going to get a mover and a seconder, and then we can get contributions. So, moved by Councillor Fox and seconded by Councillor Midgley. Councillor Fox.
I have no comment. Thank you. I just moved for the sake of moving it. Thank you.
Thank you, Councillor Fox. Councillor Cordova.
Thank you, Acting Mayor. My question relates to the Kingborough Sports and Recreation Engagement Report. Please can we unpack, because I am aware of the significance of the aquatic centre and swimming pool, but can staff please provide us some context for why it is that the aquatic centre came out on top? In what ways did the aquatic centre come out as a core theme of that strategy, of that response?
It's just me.
Through you, Acting Mayor, the survey done of the community sought to determine where there are barriers to participation in sport and recreation activities. It sought to determine community views on opportunities for improving council service delivery, and it also provided just an opportunity to provide any other comments. So throughout all of those responses, the lack of an aquatic facility in Kingborough, particularly a council provided facility, came through very strongly.
Councillor Cordova.
Thank you, Acting Mayor. So, yeah, very briefly, the way I read it, and thank you so much for that explanation, it was really resounding. But obviously there's other sports and facilities that our residents do want, but it was just resounding. Like question four, for example, where the question was, in what indoor sport and recreational activities do you currently participate? The top with 144 was gym, fitness, group fitness, and then coming in second with 137 was swimming, pool. Then it was 104 was the third, which was do not participate in sport, in indoor sport. So then question six, in what sport and recreational activities do you currently participate? The very top with 186 was football, followed by at 107 swimming, and then third was netball. And then at question eight, in what areas could council improve its delivery of sport and recreational facilities? And the top comment with 61 responses was pool. Now, the second highest comment had 13 responses, which was cycling and paths, which I thought was quite telling as well. And the third highest comment with 10 responses was skate park and roller area. So to me, the fact that 61 and then we said pool and then number two came in with 10, it just shows how much, how popular it is. And then finally, the highest response with 22 responses to question 9, what barriers, if any, prevent or limit your participation in sport or recreational activities in your local area? The highest response with 22 was no pool facilities. And some of the quotes there I think are really worth looking at as well regarding why people want a swimming pool or an aquatic centre in general. One of those quotes is, the Kingborough population has increased dramatically and we really need a proper swimming facility. It is not good enough when you consider the demand for a swimming pool
Councillor
for recreation.
Councillor Cordova, don't think we need a summary of the report.
Yeah.
Is there a question or a contribution about whether we note it?
Am I not allowed to make a contribution?
You just seem to be giving us a really good summary of everything that's in the report.
Is that...
I'm just wondering where this is going.
Well, I'm just checking if that's relevant to this. Are you saying that it's not relevant?
Well, the motion is that we note the appendices, so...
But I'm commenting on the report. Are we not supposed to comment on the report that's before us? I think we're allowed to.
Miss, can I ask a point of order? With appendices, aren't we meant to ask questions of the Mayor and Council officers about information in the appendices? I believe that is why we do this. So commentary and reading out documentation I don't think would fall within that. Is that what you're trying to say, Acting Mayor?
That is what I'm trying to say. Is that correct, General Manager?
through you, Acting Mayor, that's certainly the intent of having the appendices on the public record to be received and noted and to enable councillors to ask questions.
Thank you. I appreciate that, Acting Mayor. And I yet am to hear where within the meeting procedures regulations I'm transgressing. I would point us to 22, debate at council meeting, and I'll make the point that a councillor has the right to not speak for more than 5 minutes on a motion. This is a motion. I'm a councillor. I get to speak for up to 5 minutes. If I'm in transgression of the meeting procedures regulations, do let me know. But I don't think I am. I mean, the intent...
All right, carry on. Thank you.
Thank you. I do appreciate it. And, look... You know, I was getting right to the end of it, actually, which is that it's not good enough when you consider the demand for a swimming pool for recreation, swimming as a sport, swimming to recover from injury, incredibly important that everyone, particularly children, learn to swim in an adequate facility. The reason why I draw our collective attention to this report is because it came through loud and clear what the community is saying about an aquatic facility, and I think that we as a council can do better in answering that need. So I really am pleased that I've drawn the council's attention to this. I really hope that we respond in a meaningful way to that overwhelming demand for an aquatic facility in Kingborough. Thank you, Acting Mayor.
Thank you. Councillor Dean.
Yeah, I've just got a question. And I guess on that point that Councillor Cordova has pointed out, this is a motion and we are in our right by the meeting regulations to talk to it. I know the intent of appendices is to note it, but we are absolutely in our right to have our 5 minutes. My question, though, is related also to the Sport and Recreation Engagement Report. Can I just have potentially... staff explain, because we've heard a lot about swimming pools tonight already, what is the context of this report and what will happen now that a report has been tabled here and what might happen moving forward, just so that those listening in tonight might have a bit of understanding of why this came about and what might happen next.
Mr. Smee.
Through you, Acting Mayor. So for context, Council has an existing 2013 Sport and Recreation Strategy that was prepared for a 10-year period, so we are now at a point in time where that needs to be reviewed. So Council has formed a reference group made up of community stakeholders to assist in the review of that strategy. As part of that process, the reference group have assisted in terms of putting together a survey of the community and also a survey of our young people who are at school, and the results of that engagement have been provided first to councillors for information. They will now be provided to the reference group. They will be analysed by staff and we will seek to determine what are the recommendations that will fall out of that engagement. bearing in mind that there also needs to be overlaid our demographic analysis, our projected population analysis, along with the more specific feedback that we've obtained from the various sport and recreation clubs and organisations with our community. So that's the context, and the way forward is one of analysis, prioritisation, recommendation that will ultimately bring a draft report to council for approval.
Councillor Dean.
So just to clarify, we as councillors, I have an opportunity when a further report comes before us to discuss A, what's in this engagement report, and B, what is potentially in a draft sport and rec strategy.
It's just me.
Through you, Acting Mayor, that's 100% correct.
Councillor Dean. I had Councillor Midgley next and then Councillor Antoli.
Thank you. I thought I saw Councillor Street's light on. Yep. I also would like to speak to the Sport and Rec report. Sorry, did you have your light on, Councillor Street?
No,
I didn't. Oh, okay, thank you. And I'm involved in the committee for this as well, so I look forward to this being tabled at the committee and seeing their responses. But really, it's such a great response. Like, the numbers are so high, and especially for young people. Like, it's really great to see the young people's views on this as well. I love community engagement. One of the things that we sometimes forget to do is to go back to the community and actually feed back the kind of findings of what we've heard. Yes, we kind of do that when we do the strategy and that kind of a thing, but it'd be great to sort of think about a little bit of a feedback, especially to young people, because they took that time to actually do it, maybe a little, I don't know, postcards type thing, saying something like, you know, what the top was, you told us. You participate in, you would like more of, and then kind of let them know, like, what we're going to do about it. So it'd be great, I guess, that whole engagement principle as well, because so many young people and adults get asked things, and then we never kind of, we've got to close in that feedback loop. So I'd love to see and hear about how we're going to close that feedback loop, and I guess that can be discussed in the committee as well. But, yeah, that's all. It's just, it's really great to see, great that we can move forward, and I guess as chair of the Bicycle Committee, we've got a meeting on Friday, and I'll definitely raise this because we can see that you know, cycling is a top priority as well.
Thank you. Councillor Antoli.
Yes, I'd like to ask a question about meeting procedures around this particular part of our agenda. I really would like to get some clarification either tonight or maybe at a future meeting between yourself, the General Manager and the Mayor on whether or not rereading a report, using up your 5 minutes' time to read to us all something that
Councillor
we have.
Councillor Antoli, might I suggest that we discuss this outside of this meeting, because that actually isn't relevant to this particular item.
Well, for me, it's a point of order on meeting procedures, and I'd like to get some clarification, because I view it as abuse of the council meeting procedures to just reread and bore the community and fellow councillors what is written in the report, just to pontificate.
Point of order. Point of order.
Council What's your Fox. Point of order?
I think the councillor is maligning a fellow councillor by using the word abuse. Thank you.
Okay. I think that word was quite strong. Councillor Antoli, would you be comfortable if we worked this out outside of this meeting?
Yep.
Thank you very much.
But I wonder on the record that I get messages when that happens, and people, it's an inappropriate use of our council time in meetings.
Okay. Thank you. That is noted. So are there any other contributions to the appendices? If not, Councillor Fox, would you like to sum up? Okay, I'll put the motion. The recommendation is printed on page 53. It was moved by Councillor Fox and seconded by Councillor Midgley. All those in favour, please say aye.
Aye.
The ayes have it. We're now on page 54, the ELGAT General Meeting Motion. Before we move to discuss, I just wanted to say that it is my intention to let the Mayor know that we would like to vote yes to all four of these. And before we move to discuss, if I can just get a raise of hands, if everybody's in agreeance, then we can just put the motion straight away. So the first two, the middle two were our motions anyway. So we'll be voting yes to those. But for number one and four, is anybody have a differing opinion to voting yes to all of them?
Just a procedure question. Shouldn't it be the other way around? Shouldn't we be discussing and then we move to decide what we're going to vote yes or no on?
Before we move to discuss, I was just wanting to get an indication if everyone's in agreeance, and if so, I'll just put the motion.
Well, I'm open to the discussion.
Move on. Is everyone happy with a yes to all of them, or does someone have a different opinion?
I kind of wanted to hear a bit more about the 42-day development application timeframe one.
Okay.
But I don't need to discuss the other ones. The other ones I'm in favour of.
All right. Well, we'll move into discussion then. I'm looking for a mover and a seconder, please. Moved by Councillor Midgley, seconded by Councillor Fox. All those in favour, please say aye.
Aye.
Okay, we're in discussion. Councillor Cordova.
Thanks. I just kind of wanted to hear why we think it's a really good idea, and that's what I would like to hear about why we think it's a good idea.
General Manager.
Through you, Acting Mayor. It's been moved by the City of Clarence, and the motion effectively talks about a review of the 42 days on the basis that Clarence have observed that on some occasions a request for an extension of time to allow a matter to be determined in the chamber is not necessarily forthcoming. They're not saying whether the review will come up with recommendations that will enable that to, well, suggest that that should continue or is a bad thing. They're merely seeking a review of the ability for an applicant to refuse what they're determining a reasonable request for an extension of time.
Councillor Cordova.
And so my two questions on that are just, does this happen at Kingborough a lot or more than Clarence? And the follow-up point to that is it true that providing this review will hopefully give people who are not the proponent, it will give them a bit more leeway and a bit more ability to engage in that planning process? So the first question was, does this happen a lot in Kingborough?
Mr Arnold.
Through you, Acting Mayor. It happens occasionally, Councillor Cordova, is the answer to your question. There have been occasions that I can recall during my time at Kingborough where a request for an extension of time to enable it to go to the chamber has not necessarily been granted. Our internal process, whenever that occurs, should it occur, is to alert the councillors before that decision is made under delegation wherever possible. I can't speak on behalf of Clarence how they handle those matters, but suffice to say that their notice of motion is seeking a review. One would assume that it has been an occasional occurrence at Clarence as well.
Thank you. And so then the final question through you, Acting Mayor, is just that if my reading of this is correct, and I hope it is, it means that people who might want to put in their representations about a development, that is, not the developer, but the, say, the neighbour or the person in the community or the person on the street, they might, through the purpose of this review, they might be able to have a bit more of a say, or they might have more flexibility in timeframes. Is my interpretation correct?
General Manager.
Through you, Acting Mayor, not necessarily how I read it, Councillor Cordova. I have to say, my reading of it was that the notice of motion from Clarence is more accurately endeavouring to try and get some clarity around those situations where there might be legitimate reasons for an extension to be granted to enable a council to consider the matter and determine it, rather than under delegation through an officer. Mm. I'm mindful that, as all councillors are, that there is the ability for any council to call a special meeting of council. But I think the point that Clarence perhaps haven't necessarily spoken about loud and clear in their notice of motion is that if the decision is left to the absolute last minute, there will be occasions where that just wouldn't allow an officer or a general manager or indeed a planning manager the ability to suggest to the mayor that a special meeting be called to consider the application.
Okay.
Councillor Cordova.
Thank you. On the basis of that, I'm happy to say yes to this.
Are there any other contributions? We're in discussion. No. Is everyone happy then to record a yes against all of these? Okay. Would someone like to put the motion? So it was moved by Councillor Fox and a seconder, please. Councillor Midgley. The recommendation is on page 55. Moved by Councillor Fox, seconded by Councillor Midgley. All those in favour, please say aye.
Aye.
And against, motion is carried. We're now on page 70, the financial report for September 2023. I'm looking for a mover and a seconder, please. Move Councillor Midgley, seconded Councillor Bain. Councillor Midgley.
Thank you, Acting Mayor. Yes, I'll support the financial report, and it's always good and valuable information to be provided to councillors and the community. I had just a couple of questions. When I go through the discussion, I'm always interested in the figures. For example, the rates are 25 under budget, but last time we looked at it, they were 15 under budget. And there's always just, I guess, variables in that. But then when we come to the end regarding the finance and the summary there, we're pretty much, I guess things just fluctuate up and down in regards to the different figures as they do with budgets and things like that and different things that are spending and costing and that sort of thing. But basically we're still on track for an underlying deficit, and that remains on track for what we've seen in previous financial periods. So I'm happy to support that. Just a question I had was really around the public open space, and I had a look, say, in July 2022, and we had public open space of 784,000, 637,000, and now our public open space is 58,571. So that's quite a bit of a change. But noting as well with that, we've done some really significant projects, and there's a lot of fantastic things happening in our council area, but I guess what are we looking in regards to these funds for the future, and is there any concern, I guess, with that amount of the number of growing projects that we have on our list in that area?
Mr. Smee.
Through you, Acting Mayor, so obviously the reason that the amount has reduced is because as part of the budget council approved, I think it was some $500,000 worth of expenditure from that reserve to go towards various recreational projects. In relation to the question of is it a concern going forward, not necessarily so. It would just mean that more will need to come from our capital program, and there just won't be that opportunity there to dip into that reserve. But bearing in mind the direction from councillors was quite clear that they wanted to see the public open space funds put to good use within the community. So our last two budgets, that's what we've done in terms of funding additional projects that were listed as part of the capital program where they specifically related to recreational infrastructure.
Councillor Midgley. No, Councillor Bain.
Thank you, Acting Mayor. Just a follow-up question in relation to that one, the open space funds. Is there any movement on we've got the block of land on the Channel Highway to Runa. Is that currently on the market, and if it does sell, the funds from that will go into public open space, and there's currently nothing attached to that because all the playgrounds are accounted for?
It's just me.
Through you, Acting Mayor, the property has been on the market for some time. It's received some interest, but we have had to reduce the asking price on that. Not strictly correct in saying there's no commitments for that funding. The development of Louisa Hinsby Reserve was done on a forward advance on those funds, so I think the cost of developing that reserve was some $175,000, so that will need to be deducted from whatever the proceeds of the sale are.
Councillor Bain.
No, nothing further.
Okay, thank you. I had a question. I noticed on a page 128, the Whitewater Creek Somerleys Road underpass, this was grant funded, wasn't it? Why does it appear then in our capital works budget?
The answer to that, Acting Mayor, is we do list all of our capital projects, whether they're grant funded, public open space funded or capital funded. They all need to be capitalised ultimately, so they all appear in our capital program.
Thank you. Are there any other comments or questions? Nope. I'll put the motion then. There's a recommendation on page 72. It was moved by Councillor Midgley, seconded by Councillor Bain. All those in favour, please say aye.
Aye.
And against, the ayes have it. Page 132, notices of motion. There were no notices of motion. Turning now to page 132, still confirmation of items to be dealt with in closed session. That in accordance with Regulation 15 of the Local Government Meeting Procedures Regulation 2015, Council by absolute majority move into closed session to consider the following items. Confirmation of minutes, application for leave of absence. Looking for a mover and a seconder, please. Move Councillor Bain, seconded Councillor Antoli. All those in favour, please say aye. And against, motion is carried. So thank you very much to all of those watching along via YouTube. In accordance with the Kingborough Council meeting's audio recording guidelines policy, recording of the open session of the meeting will now cease.